President-elect Donald Trump is already shaping global economic policy.
A Reuters survey of Japanese businesses recently showed nearly three-quarters expect Trump to have a negative effect on their operating environment.
Will it be boom or bust for nations hit with new Trump tariffs?
I think that it will. A lot of production will probably move to Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia.
Join us now on The Voice of America as we explore the issues in the news. I'm Scott Walterman in Washington. Donald Trump seemed poised to inherit a relatively strong economy when he begins his second term in the White House in January. Then the Federal Reserve signaled it would have fewer than expected interest rate cuts next year, sending the stock market tumbling. And Trump added to the uncertainty by blowing up a spending bill in Congress. Now other leading central banks signaled caution over their rate paths. Let's get an overview now from Reuters correspondent Sierra Lee.
The imminent arrival of Donald Trump in the White House has already been shaping global economic policymaking. This week, the U.S. Federal Reserve flagged fewer rate cuts and other leading central banks signaled caution over their rate paths too. The Fed cut rates as expected on Wednesday, but accompanied the move with a message that the incoming Trump administration gave cause for caution. The sentiment was echoed by its counterparts in London, Tokyo, Frankfurt, and elsewhere. The repeated urging of caution around further rate cuts triggered a slide in stock prices. Just a single Fed rate cut is now priced in for 2025. As expected, the Bank of England kept its main interest rate unchanged at 4.75% on Thursday. It said it needed to stick to its existing gradual approach to cutting rates. In Japan, the central bank has kept its ultra-low interest rates. The threat of Trump's policies has cast a shadow over the export-reliant economy. A Reuters survey of Japanese businesses recently showed nearly three-quarters expect Trump to have a negative effect on their operating environment. Norway's central bank held its policy interest rate unchanged at a 16-year high. It's highlighted the risk of a trade war between the United States and China. While Sweden's central bank has said it now sees reasons to be more cautious about cutting rates in early 2025. The European Central Bank's president, Christine Lagarde, was vague about further rate cuts when she spoke this month. She went out of her way to emphasize downside risks to growth, including from prospective trade tensions with the U.S. under Trump.
Reuters correspondent Sierra Lee. So, here's the question. Just how much can a government, the U.S. government, any government, actually control with short-term measures? Some say not much. Among them is Larry Konnikoff, a professor of economics at Boston University, who joins us now to talk about all of this. Thank you very much for being able to talk to us.
My pleasure.
Let's start in the United States. The economy in the United States is, by almost every measure, pretty good right now, yes?
I would say it's pretty okay, not pretty good. It's been pretty okay for a long time. It was pretty okay under Trump. It was pretty okay, maybe a tad bit better under Biden. The idea that President Trump made America great again, not the case. He made it just continue to do what it's doing, which is growing at a pretty slow rate when you look at growth in median weekly earnings. Real earnings have been running around 1%. And frankly, that's not terrific for most American workers. That's just kind of barely getting along. It's not the American dream that your kids will have a much better way of life, much higher living standard than you've had.
Well, in fact, it's unlikely that they're going to live at the standard that we did. Isn't that right?
For lots of households, for lots of younger people, that's the case. We've had increasing wage inequality is the real four-decade-long story. So we're becoming a have and have not society, similar to what we see in most of Latin America. You know, this connects to policies that fundamentally are locking the poor into poverty and low-wage workers into poverty generation after generation by giving them no real incentive to earn more money, because if they earn more money, they lose so much in benefits that it doesn't pay. And that happens because if you earn an extra $1,000, you start losing. You can potentially lose Medicaid for yourself, Medicaid for your kids. And this can happen over several years if you save some of the extra $1,000 because of the asset tests. We have about 500 fiscal policies that were set up by politicians who never looked at their interaction. And what you're seeing in Congress right now is a major disagreement among Republicans over whether they think you can be in a fiscal fantasy land and continue that way and increase official debt and increase off-the-books debt, which is vastly larger than on-the-books debt. So people do not know that we are entirely broke, that the country's terribly insolvent and getting worse every year because most of the liabilities are not being disclosed to the public. So, yeah, so there are some grown-ups in Congress, and then there are some people that want to talk loud and you know, put the country down the tubes, which is unfortunately the majority of Congress.
Well, but Congress has sort of ignored fiscal policy for so long. That's how, you know, it's sort of abdicated it to the Fed, no?
Yeah, I mean, official debt to GDP has gone up, and the Fed, I don't think the Fed has much power over inflation, but the inflation that arose, I think it's largely due to supply side bottlenecks under COVID, because we had inflation all over the world, not just in the U.S. But thanks to inflation having raised prices by about 25% since 2019, the official debt that was outstanding then was watered down so that it could buy a certain number of hot dogs back in 2019. And the debt that was outstanding then and is still outstanding now, like 30-year bonds that had been issued before 2019, they can buy 25% fewer hot dogs today because the price of hot dogs and basically everything else has gone up by a quarter. So one way we have been running fiscal policy and getting some additional taxes is by reneging on our official debt. But that's the path of third-rate countries, countries that are fiscally irresponsible. The extreme is Venezuela. We don't want to go that way. We want to get our fiscal house in order. And that means we have to stop looking just at the official debt and the deficit and do what's called fiscal gap accounting and generational accounting.
Well, right now, the Fed this week said probably not going to see the number of interest rate reductions they were planning for next year. And then President-elect Trump killed the budget deal, and it's spooking markets and central banks around the world. What do you think is happening there?
Well, I think part of what's going on here is that the markets had a big run-up. The stock market went up about 50% over the last 2 years, the S&P. So everybody's looking for a correction when that happens, and they're looking for some piece of information where they think everybody else is going to jump on that bandwagon. So when you say spooking, it could have been anything that's spooking. It could have been the drones flying over New Jersey right now. It could have spooked everybody because they're just looking for some coordinated thing that they think everybody else is acting off of. So I don't think fundamentally that what the Fed said they're doing or changing what they're doing wasn't anticipated. There's plenty of people that watch the Fed pretty closely on Wall Street, so they kind of should have anticipated exactly what the Fed, you know, would say at this point in time. But the real question, I think, about the Fed is whether the Fed matters. You know, we've had this huge increase in prices, 25% cumulatively since 2019, and the Fed engaged in some action, and it didn't stop inflation in its track. The Fed was there, and the Fed, if you said the Fed's responsible for price increases, then, and you know, keeping the price level stable, it failed miserably. But I don't think the Fed has this power. I think you have a 35 million individual businesses that are setting prices, and when Port of Los Angeles can't bring in cargo ships because there's just too many. They're overwhelmed, or, you know, we have other supply bottlenecks. Prices are going to go up. And then people that were in the service sector may leave because, you know, maybe they left during COVID. In general, it hasn't just been like, you know, food or grocery bills, restaurant meals have gone up. Those, interestingly, have gone up about the same percentage as other prices in the economy. The interesting thing is that the Fed didn't get anything good to happen during this period. Everything went to hell, and they did whatever they wanted to do, but they didn't stop it from going to hell. But the fact of the matter is that the Fed sets one single thing, which is the short-term interest rate, and the idea that that's going to impact the prices for all these products, I think that's a little ridiculous. So I think we're overdoing our impression of what the Fed's ability to impact the economy is totally overstated. I think the amount of research that economists do on what the Fed's impact is on the economy is completely over the top. And I think that the Fed is not going to be able to bail out the economy on a short-term basis, and certainly not on a long-term basis. We have to pay our bills. It's that simple. And so we can't rely on the Fed to address the fact that we're spending more than we can afford. And we have been doing so for really 7 decades. And we've been relying on future generations growing more rapidly and being more productive. But when you have median real earnings growing at 1%, you just don't have enough people earning enough money to pay enough taxes to pay for my Social Security benefits. It's just that simple.
So you think the talk of new tax cuts is the wrong way to go?
This is like a heroin addict who's overdosed trying to take some fentanyl just to solve their how they're feeling. Yes, completely the wrong direction. What we need is to change the conversation so the Republicans and Democrats in Congress, none of whom have a PhD in economics, you have to realize. So they're trying to engineer the economy without an engineering degree, any even basics in engineering, in economics engineering here. So if we change the conversation and talk about big changes, out-of-the-box changes, things that will not immediately turn off the reds and the blues, things that OAC and Mitch McConnell haven't even thought about, then they can actually start having a conversation without built-in prejudices about the answer. And that's what we need to do. We need to change the conversation so we can talk about, and that's what, you know, it's not just for purposes of getting both sides to talk to each other, but for getting them to think, to get away from their knee-jerk reactions to everything. That's a large part of why I think President Trump won here. It's not that everybody wanted to go for crazy, but they realized the country needs change, and Kamala Harris was not offering anything besides platitudes and one-liners on the biggest problems we're facing. She couldn't, it seems to me, string together 5 sentences about anything, you know, like Social Security. How are you going to fix it? You know, well, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. Well, it's got a $63 trillion unfunded liability, according to the trustees' report. That was issued last April on table 6F1. Anybody can Google it this minute and take a look. $63 trillion, that's twice the official debt. People were voting for some change, even if it involved kind of blowing up the dike that's stopping the ocean from flooding the country, when the alternative was putting fingers into the dike where there was springing more and more leaks. Maybe if you have the country flooded, a new dike will be put up that will actually hold.
Well, I want to just return to the Fed really quickly. You know, the only thing they do control is short-term interest. You are not wrong. Some people say the reason we had such an inflationary period and are still is because they had that money at zero and negative even for so long after the 08 crisis.
We don't have a clear handle on what exactly causes inflation, even over long periods of time, or the price level to go up. We see periods when the money supply is going up dramatically, but prices haven't moved, and other times when it's gone up dramatically and prices have risen. We've seen periods when interest rates have been low, very low, real rates as well as nominal rates, and prices have risen, and also periods when they haven't risen. So I think, you know, it's good to be an older economist because you actually have lived through a lot of episodes and have enough brains to look at the data. We have a lot of younger economists who you can ask them, what did Volcker do exactly in 2000 and was it 19, I think it was 79 when he intervened and stopped that recession, that big inflation that we were having at the time by scaring the entire public. Did he actually change monetary policy like he said he was going to do? And everybody, every textbook says, well, Volcker changed monetary policy and therefore he stopped inflation through that mechanism. Well, no, he didn't change money. The money supplies, the two that he talked about, continued on their path. So what he said he was going to do, he never did. What he did is he panicked everybody. And just like today, we're seeing this, probably we're seeing the market, I don't know what's happening with the markets right at this minute, but yesterday they plunged because of everybody decided that everybody else was selling, so we're going to sell too. And that's collective panic, and that's not economics fundamentally.
So it's hard to, you know, as he said, as President-elect Trump said, you know, on the campaign trail, he says, I'm going to bring prices down day one. And then last week he said, you know, it's hard to bring prices down. He's right about the second time. It's hard to bring prices down.
Every so often, President Trump says something that makes sense. and everything, all the other time, he says something that people want to hear. And he did a very good job saying things that people wanted to hear that was never going to happen, never will happen, like we're not going to tax Social Security benefits, or we're going to drop the corporate income tax to 15%, or we're not going to tax tips. I mean, he couldn't even get yesterday his budget agreement to be passed. 37 members of the House who are Republican said, hell no, I'm not going to vote for fiscal irresponsibility. I don't care if it's President Trump or Elon Musk or Vivek Ramaswamy says to do it. I have a little more common sense than these folks, and I'm not going to jeopardize my grandchildren. So at some point, people start thinking about the grandchildren and the country, not who they're, you know, whose ring they're kissing.
Right.
Or who's got the most money in the country.
Thank you very much for the time and the insight.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Larry Kotakoff, a professor of economics at Boston University. You're listening to Issues in the News. I'm Scott Walterman.
Tariffs will make our country rich.
As President-elect Donald Trump promises to follow through on a plan to impose tariffs on major U.S. trading partners, China is getting ready. Reuters correspondent Francis McGuire has the details.
Chinese leaders have agreed to raise the budget deficit to 4% of gross domestic product next year. The number would be the highest on record. That's according to Reuters sources, who also said Beijing will stick to an economic growth target of around 5%. The new deficit plan compares with an initial target of 3% of GDP for this year. It's also in line with a more proactive fiscal policy outlined by leading officials this month. The additional 1 percentage point of GDP in spending amounts to about $179.4 billion. The sources said more stimulus will be funded through issuing off-budget special bonds. These targets are usually not announced officially until an annual parliament meeting in March, and they could still change before the legislative session. Beijing did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. The stronger fiscal approach planned for next year forms part of China's preparations to counter the impact of higher US tariffs. They're expected to rise upon the return of Donald Trump as US president in January. Reuters reported last month that government advisers had recommended Beijing not to lower its growth targets. The world's second largest economy has struggled this year due to a severe property crisis, high local government debt and weak consumer demand. Exports have been one of the few bright spots, but that could soon face US tariffs over 60% if Trump delivers on his campaign pledges. Analysts believe China is likely to rely heavily on fiscal stimulus next year, but could also use other tools to deal with the impact of tariffs.
That's Reuters correspondent Francis McGuire reporting. During his last term, Trump's tariffs were a boon to some countries. Joining us now to talk about all of this is Margaret Peters, professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and author of Trading Barriers, Immigration, and the Remaking of Globalization. Well, thank you very much for being able to talk with us about this.
Not a problem.
So the last time during the previous Trump administration that we, the United States, imposed these tariffs on China, it was a great boon for places like Vietnam because companies moved their factories across the border into northern Vietnam, and tens of thousands of people got hired, and the production of the goods just shifted there. Is that right?
That is correct. Yes. So we saw a lot of goods moved to places like Vietnam. Other goods moved to Mexico. More goods started to be made in places like Bangladesh or Pakistan. So yeah, mostly we saw just production move elsewhere out of China, but not to the United States.
Right. And what I'm reading is that nearly a third of Vietnam's exports are now going to the U.S. Do you think they are now a potential target of potential tariffs in general or throughout Southeast Asia be unexpected opportunities for others in the region?
You know, I think it's a little of both. I do think once President Trump figures out that production is moving to places like Vietnam, they could really be targets of additional tariffs. But because they're not as prevalent in the U.S. as of now, you might be able to get away with it for a while. So I think that a lot of production will probably move to Vietnam, Malaysia, Indonesia, and will be able to make money still in those countries, even with tariffs. Because you have to remember, China's net labor costs have risen over the last 20, 30 years. And so they weren't even competitive in certain goods like textiles and really low-end manufacturing for a long time. And so what we should see is that places like Vietnam and Indonesia that have very low labor costs might, even with tariffs, still be the most competitive producers.
So you said a lot of it, and we've seen evidence of this, move to Mexico, which is also under the threat of tariffs. So I assume that if they do put tariffs on Mexico, there's going to be a scramble to move production out of Mexico somewhere else, potentially in Central or Southern America.
Yes. So you might also see movement further south in Central America. We do have CAFTA, DR, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, along with Dominican Republic. So we do already have a decent amount of production of goods, especially in places like Costa Rica and also in the Dominican Republic. So we should see potentially more production move there as well. Basically, the tariffs are kind of create this game of whack-a-mole in some ways where companies are going to keep moving to where it's easiest and cheapest for them to make the goods. And this will affect different types of companies differently. Some things like textiles and clothes can move pretty easily. It's easy to move your sewing machines. But other things that take a lot of investment just won't move. And those goods will just become more expensive.
That's UCLA Professor Margaret Peters. Well, that's all the time we have this week for Issues in the News. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. For more news throughout the week, you can listen to our podcast, The Issue, which is available on our website, voanews.com, or wherever you get your podcast from. Join us next week for more Issues in the News. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.